All right, hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Nick and Garrett Get Serious About Jokes. I'm Nick.
And I'm Garrett.
And we are back, ready to talk to you about Jim Jeffries' latest Netflix special, This Is Me Now. I feel like we're both energized and caffeined up. I got some coffee with me. What do you have, Coke?
It's a Dr. Pepper,
cocaine.
Yeah.
Dr. Pepper.
From Burger Room.
Not Coca-Cola.
If you're in Murfreesboro, it's a new burger place which popped up.
Yeah, I've driven by, but I've never seen it. Like,
yeah, we had to ask them how to pronounce it. I thought it was Burger IM, instant message, send someone a burger.
Right, because the IM is a different color from the burger.
It's misleading.
In the letter,
misleading. Yeah. Apparently, it's one word, Burger IM. It's supposed to be like infinite burgers. I don't know. It doesn't matter, but it confuses me.
I like infinite burgers better as a name. Well, okay. How was it?
It was pretty good. They're more like sliders. They're like big sliders. They were good. It was good. There's a lot of options as well.
Not a lot of places specialize in sliders. Like Crystals and White Castle, which is like, you know, twins and evil twins, depending on which one you like more. That's not a bad market to try to corner.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit like more expensive Crystal.
Okay.
But, like, for me, the appeal of Crystal is that it's cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like...
I do feel like there are times when I will crave Crystals, like...
Yeah.
And then I always regret it, but while I'm eating it, it does taste really good.
You're right.
So maybe I should try Burger Rim because, you know, maybe not just more expensive, but...
Yeah. This podcast is not sponsored by Burger Rim.
No.
If anyone from Burger Rim is listening and you'd like to sponsor us, please let us know.
There's nothing else to say besides that. I feel like that is perfect. Let you ready to slide into this Jim Jeffries story. Yeah. We know him. I mean, he's got his own show now, which I've never seen it. Have you seen it?
I've watched like a few clips, like on YouTube and stuff. It's pretty funny. He's interesting because like he's definitely pretty liberal, but he's also like the type of personality that likes to like give people shit regardless.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is interesting because I've seen clips where he's had like people from different sides over, and he's just kind of a dick.
both.
Not in like a bad way. Like he still lets people have their like time to speak or whatever, but he, you know, has the same personality that you see in his specials.
Yeah.
So from what I've seen, it's a pretty fun show. Looks like he does a good job.
Yeah, yeah. He definitely seems like the type of talk show host who kind of revels in being mischievous towards specific people. You know what I mean? Because not every... Like Seth Meyers. I mean, he's the way he'll tell jokes that are, you know, going at Trump and going at, but I wouldn't consider him mischievous. Like he's not gonna do a segment where he goes and messes with people on the streets. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So it definitely seems like, but I definitely could see Jim Jeffries doing that. I saw his. I haven't seen the Bear special, but I saw Freedom, which is the one where he does the gun control bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is probably the thing he's most known for now.
Yeah.
Because, like, in subsequent specials, like, he always mentions it. Because it went, like, well, I don't know if a comic can go viral, but it went viral and, like, everyone's seen it. Or, like, a lot of people have seen it. If someone's seen, like, anything from Jim Jeffries, it's probably that bit just because it's such like a big topic currently.
I think it's interesting because I think he he just found it as a source material. I think he's just as surprised as anyone else that it got the traction that it did. I don't know how famous of a comic or what his career trajectory was before that, but it definitely helped his career.
Yeah, for sure.
It kind of reminds me a little bit of the Hannibal Buress thing that we were talking about last week where he mentions Bill Cosby. And then, I mean, he was you know, he'd written in Saturday Night Live, and but it seemed like that is what kind of is what he's known for more than anything else. So
that still is blowing my mind. Like a week later,
what the
like the whole like videos you showed me, but also like the Hannibal Buress thing when you're talking about Bill Cosby.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like I had no idea that that even existed, and like it's insane to me. I'm still like. Still blowing my mind currently.
Well, to be clear, you knew about Bill Cosby. It was just the material.
Yeah, I knew about... So the Hannibal Buress video we're talking about, or is a part of his stand-up where he's talking about Bill Cosby before before things started getting really blatantly obvious with Bill Cosby. And he's talking about, like, all the, you know, some of the things that he's done.
Yeah.
And it's just crazy that, like, maybe it's just hindsight, but things seem so much more obvious now. And it's...
Yeah, because you'd never seen Cosby's Spanish Fly.
I'd never seen that. And to me, that, like, just hearing that was, like, I mean, it's creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, when I heard that, I was like, oh, my God. Like, how did people not believe the people that came forward, you know?
Oh, I know, yeah.
It's like, this guy, like, admitted it, and it's comedy.
And then we watched the Larry King... The excerpt from the Larry King interview where he mentions it as well. And it's like, it's kind of crazy when you see it. And, I mean, you, for the first time after knowing everything.
Gives you kind of chills. Like,
yeah, I know.
Creepy.
Well, and not that it's, like there's some overlap, but not, In this bad of way, but like I know, like what Louis C.K. got in trouble for, and then you watch his material, and it's like, man, he talks about masturbation a lot, and he talks about it a lot even on his show, like, and it's
and it's also like I feel like I'm not 100% sure about this, but I'm just like thinking of all the stand up I've seen by Louis C.K. and I feel like usually when he's doing an act out, it's to masturbate.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I feel like he doesn't do it a lot, but there's that one, like, there's, like, that one bit that's, like, 2 or 3 minutes long where he's, like, masturbating, and, like, he acts the whole thing out, and it's, like, supposed to be long and drawn out, and it's, like, I feel like he doesn't really do act-outs that much.
Yeah, but then that's the one thing he does.
But that's the one he chose to act out.
That's why I have to rewatch it with that in mind, just to because I'm sure it'll jump out at me more. You know what I mean? Like, but let's talk about Jim for sure. Like, I will say I think my favorite part of the special was when he was telling the Mariah Carey story, and kind of it was almost a little bit of an Inception thing, because he's talking about how he became famous with the gun control bit, or at least that's how he was known.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's doing the bit for Mariah Carey's husband's birthday party. And the husband clearly has no idea who he is until about 5 or 6 minutes in. And he's like, oh, gun control. Right. And then, go ahead. We were talking about it a little bit before we started recording, about the bit.
I'm pretty sure, like, in, like, a subsequent special of his,
he
talks about it he talks about it in this one, too, because this is the thing that, like, went really well for him.
Yeah.
So it's a thing he mentions because people know him for that more than they know him for anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
But in one of his specials, if I'm remembering correctly, he talks about the thing, and like people have criticized him for it, and apparently the things that he said, like the statistics that he gave, were sort of like just guesses.
Yeah.
That he was just like, that sounds good.
Yeah.
And just said those things, which is a little bit weird. It's definitely like morally questionable, because it's such a contentious topic right now, and he has this platform for all these people, and he's just like throwing that out there. And then the next special, he's like, yeah, I did that. So it's kind of interesting, at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like... I mean, I would say gun control is probably... I mean, that and abortion are probably the two most contentious topics in American politics. And I think unless you grow up here, you may not know the extent to which it is. Contentious, you know what I mean?
Fair enough, because he is Australian, and like, it's way less of a deal in Australia since they seem to have solved the problem and moved on to other things.
Yeah.
But so maybe that is it. It's kind of like we were talking about cultural differences with our episode on Hannah Gadsby.
Yeah.
It may be quite different there.
I think so. I think it is. I do like what he does this, because I see this a lot with the gun control argument, where he talks about it and he uses the chainsaw, like he replaces gun with chainsaw, and it's like, yeah, the only person who can stop a guy with a chainsaw is a good guy with a chainsaw.
Yeah.
And I see that on people who are for and against stricter gun laws. Like, they will replace gun with something else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I saw an Instagram video where someone was like, something like it was people who were not in favor of gun control laws. So they were very much pro Second Amendment, and they had replaced gun with frying pan, and kind of made it seem like, well, we got to get rid of all frying pans because a guy killed someone with a frying pan, and then someone else was like, well, wait a minute, can I use this to cook? And they're like, no, it's dangerous. And then, so it's so interesting how people how the argument, you can replace it with whatever, you know, you just sort of reframe the other side's argument with
make this other side look silly. It's not really to make an argument. It's just like to get laughs from the people that agree with you.
And that's kind of, that's what he does. I mean, it's like, it's almost a back and forth.
It's like specifically not supposed to be fair, I think, is like one way to look at it. Because it's supposed to be like, this is dumb, so I'm going to exaggerate it to an extreme and then like, you know, laugh at the extreme version that I've created.
And it's interesting because, I mean, humor in arguments is helpful. I mean, if you can make your audience laugh, they're much more likely to, they probably already see your point of view, but at least if they're kind of on the fence, they can, it's easier to see things from that perspective.
For sure.
I think it's effective. I know I had a gun control bit for a while where I was like, Americans arguing about guns is like drunk bachelorettes arguing over which bar to go to next in downtown Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
And it got some traction, but it was just so hard to get the act outs the way that I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of gave up on the bit. It was about a year ago, cause it was last summer. But I did notice whenever I mentioned, just before I even got into the joke part, you could see people like perk up a little bit, like, okay, where's he going to go with this kind of thing? And it was hard to tell which side people were going to be on. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, if you mention Jesus in a setup and someone perks up, you know that person's not an atheist. You know what I mean? Like, that person is like, what are you going to say? But I feel like with the guns, it's like they perk up because they don't know where it's going to go. You know?
Yeah, so like, am I going to agree with this person or am I going to be mad about it?
Right. And people on both sides of the argument are thinking that, you know, and it's fun. It's kind of an interesting.
Yeah. It's always a perfect chance to just divide the room and make somebody angry.
Yeah. Do you know who John Hickok is?
I'm not sure. I think I've heard that name.
He's a tall local comic. Tall, bald dude, beard. Really tall, like maybe 6'5", 6'6".
Wow, okay. Tall guy.
He's not like fat big, but you know, he's a sturdy guy. But he he always wears like, you know, gun shirts and stuff. And he has millions of YouTube followers.
Oh, okay.
I think that they... not views, followers. And it's like, because I don't know if he, what exactly he does with the, but I know that he's a big advocate. And he does a pretty good job of when he's talking about guns, mm-hmm. Doing it in a way that regardless of what side you're on, you can laugh at his jokes.
Right.
But I mean, you can look at him and he even acknowledges the fact that he's like, yeah, I look like I have a lot of guns, and I do.
That's really funny.
Yeah. I don't know how what he does, if he like sells them or just markets for them or whatever, but I know he does pretty well with it.
Yeah, you can definitely be funny on either side of the argument, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
There's certainly more on the gun control side, I think, because I don't know, I feel like there's just more liberal comics. But I definitely think that it's not a disqualifier if you're for it or any argument really. I mean,
right,
because comics don't have to be right. Like, if you can just get up and be funny, then that's all that matters. And you could have the worst, most wrong opinion about something that ever existed.
As long as you have as long as your punchline, as long as it departs from the premise and the setup enough to where there's that surprise element.
Yeah.
You know, you can get a laugh out of an audience.
Right.
And that's, so I agree on that. But going back to Jeffrey's, his special, I mean, it seems like one of the things we always end up coming back to is comics talking about their kids.
Yeah.
And, it was interesting. He tells the story about, his son, his 4-year-old being sick and then him getting sick that night, later that night, which I thought was pretty, pretty funny story.
Definitely.
And then his closer also involved him going to his kid's school. It didn't really involve the kid so much. It's not so much, but it was an interesting, it kind of falls in line with one of the things we've noticed where, comics with kids, it seems like their closer is almost always a joke that involves their parenting.
I think that's
probably the funniest part of their life right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, because it's like they use it for humor, but also for a lot of them, they use it to end it on a kind of sweet note.
Yeah.
Probably because a lot of people have kids, so it's an easy thing to connect to.
Yeah.
And if you have a kid, then obviously that's a thing that usually is pretty meaningful to people.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Right.
And he kind of does that too with the first bit about his son and the food poisoning.
Yeah.
The kind of the closer to that bit is when his son comes in and he's feeling better and he's like, "We've had a rough night." Huh,
yeah.
And that to me, I didn't think it was super funny, but I laughed because I thought it was really sweet.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It was kind of aw.
Right.
But then the other one at the end was more of just it was back to jokes. But it is interesting how people usually almost use their kids as a way of, having them more, moving away from the jokes for, a moment to have something sentimental in their specials.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. It does, because it hits several notes, the parenthood thing. I was going to say something else about... something else I noticed about his special, and I've never seen anyone do this a lot, but I saw he crouched down in front of the audience
mm-hmm.
a couple times, and it worked.
Yeah.
Not that I expected it to not work, but it seems like an odd choice for a comic to make yourself smaller. Without, because it didn't really tie, he could have done it standing up. It wasn't like he was doing some sort of elaborate act out, but I mean, he crouched down as if, hey guys, I'm talking to you and it's just me and you here. That's not what he was saying, but that's kind of the vibe put off.
Yeah. It kind of felt like, I'm going to tell you a secret.
Yeah.
In a way, because he's lowering himself, getting closer to the audience because everyone else is sitting down and they're low. So it's it feels a little bit like, he's getting closer.
His intimacy. Yeah. I like that. And I like there was one point where he set in a chair.
Yeah.
And
that's the smartest thing I think of that he does. I think that I don't know why more comics don't do that. You know, because he's got an hour special, and I feel like in other specials he has a chair as well. And like at some point he's like halfway through, he'll just sit down. I don't know if it's like he has a thing where he needs to, or just he doesn't like standing up for an hour. Either way, that's a great idea. Having a chair to just like sit down and like not have to stand for a second. If you're doing an hour, I mean.
Yeah, you might as well, yeah. I mean, the way he did it too, because I mean, he kind of leaned back in the chair as if to get comfortable. And I think it, it seemed to enhance the mood, not just make him comfortable, which I did like. And I have to admit, I've thought about just trying. To sit on a stool during obviously I would do it during an open mic first, but I mean, it does change the dynamic a little bit.
Yeah. How would you think it changes the vibe or like the environment by sitting down? Like, what do you think that signals to people who are watching?
I think that there's like a subliminal, I'm getting ready to tell you a story kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe even more than just jokes. Like, all right, I'm getting ready to tell you a story. Like, it seems, I guess someone could sit down and deliver one-liners, but I don't know if it would work as well. Or maybe the type of comic, if they're not going to tell stories, he or she's not going to tell stories, the type of comic who's like, observational everyman or every woman kind of thing. Like, it would be, almost like a blue collar kind of comedy tour, like that kind of like, all right, guys, let me just talk to you about how crazy things are kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it wouldn't just have to be, it's weird because it's like, I mean, it would not be a comic who obviously relies on physical.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this. Cat Williams uses a stool a lot, but it's usually part of the physical routine. Like, he's not doing it just to, like, create that atmosphere.
Yeah. I think, like you mentioned, it could be, like, a thing for, like, if a comic is, like, probably would need to be, like, older somewhat.
Yeah.
But, like, it almost gives me the feeling of like an adult or like a parent or someone who's an authority figure with like relatives or like young kids
and then
like sitting down, like, I'm going to explain this thing to you.
Right. Yes,
and I think it could be anything from like a story, or this is the thing that I did back when I was younger, or this is how messed up our planet is right now. Or it could be a lot of things, but it's sort of like, sitting down, story. I don't know. It feels a little bit like, that's kind of the vibe I get.
No, but you know what? When you said older, it makes me think, because I think if a younger comic did, like, if Pete Davidson sat down, and did an hour special sitting down, I think, I mean, he's a good enough comic where he could probably make it work, but it just seems like there would be something a little lost there.
Yeah.
But it's strange though, because, and I know this comic's a little older than Pete Davidson, he's probably early 30s, but Jared Carmichael, his delivery is a little bit more slow. His energy is different. I feel like he could pull off sitting down on a stool.
Yeah.
And it seems like it has to be a stool almost always. Like, it can't be a chair with like a back with a back on it and everything.
Yeah.
It seems like that'd be a tough.
I love how we'll get into the minutia of comedy. Like, if you have a chair,
you better
have a good story.
If you want
to sit down in that, you have to earn that.
That's true. Yeah.
If you don't have a good story, then
you might as well just stay on your feet. Don't even.
Yeah, you can get a stool, but you don't deserve a back to that.
You got to use your core to sit up. That was something that I noticed watching the set, was just he seemed to move around a lot.
Yeah.
But it was not part of the act so much as it was just a way to create variety within his delivery without actually changing his delivery. I do think there was a couple of times where he walked to the mic stand, which was on the far end of the stage. And I think that was maybe to give the audience a chance to applaud while he was, okay, there should be a big laugh and applause break here. And it kind of gives him something to do while he, what do you think about, I've never done enough time where I've had to worry about getting a drink on stage.
Yeah.
Drinking water or anything. but I noticed he does that. He does drink beer a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it's not like a Ron White, I'm like the observational drunk, but I'm not really drunk. It's just part of the right. bit. But he does, I know Jeffries does take a couple of swigs of beer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something that I'm surprised does not happen more on stage now that I think about it. Cause oftentimes you're drinking before and after, you go on stage. I mean, those of y'all who are listening or aren't comics, we're not like getting drunk, but you might have a beer or two.
Yeah. I mean, usually you're at a bar. So it's like,
yeah,
for me, it's like, it's just being polite to like buy a drink and tip the bartender or whatever.
Yeah.
If I, have the money. And usually I don't drink a lot, so I'll usually use that as a time to like try something new out.
Right, right, right.
So yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the key would be, it seems like it would be one more thing that could throw off your rhythm. That's what I would think about it as. Like I've gone on stage with a drink in my hand, and I've worked it into bits. But I would never. Try to do it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, I wouldn't have a problem doing that at like a mic.
You know,
because it's like, if you do terribly, it's just 4 minutes.
Yeah.
So it literally can't hurt you that bad. But if you're doing something like this, I probably wouldn't. I imagine that's just like his preferred drink.
Yeah.
One thing that is actually interesting about like, because most specials, they'll have either a drink or like a bottle of water or something.
Yeah.
When my younger sister found out I was doing comedy, she doesn't see much comedy, but she was like, "Do you have to perform with like a bottle of water?" And I'm like, "No, but I guess most of them do."
Yeah.
Like when they have a special, it's like an hour long, so they have to. But it's like, just assume that was just a part of the career, I guess.
Oh yeah, they have the water on stage. Well, I think one of these is interesting. Is how often I see comics take a swig of water or whatever, and they're kind of in the middle of setting up a joke. Like, it doesn't seem like it's, I mean, like I get it if you tell a great joke and the audience is laughing and applauding, and you take a swig, appreciating the you give a minute to let it breathe, let them enjoy it, and for you to appreciate it. But there was one time during his special where he's saying something and then he takes a swig of the beer and it was like in the middle of him saying like it almost interrupts it. Now, it doesn't mess the joke up or anything.
Right.
But it does seem to maybe, I don't know if it didn't seem very natural, I guess.
Right.
As he's speaking and so, I don't know, I've seen that a lot too, where like someone is getting ready to start into another bit, and then they're almost like they forgot to take a drink, and so they take it, but it kind of throws it off a little bit.
Yeah, I wonder. Maybe one reason is like to take up time, like you said. Like if someone has like a punchline that goes really well, usually they'll like take a drink.
Yeah,
because it'll be like, okay, the audience is laughing, and so you want them to laugh, but it also can be awkward to just be like standing there, like feeling pleased with yourself, staring at these people laughing. Yeah. So, like, taking a drink of something feels more natural than just, like, watching them.
Yeah, yeah.
And Also, I wonder if people use it for the same reason to, like, build suspense, like, potentially. Like, if you have a big punchline that you're wanting to build up to, or something that you want to have a break or a pause before you say it, where it's like, this is the setup, and this is the punchline. Yeah. That maybe it can feel a little bit artificial if that pause is, like, really long. But if you take a drink in that time, it probably doesn't. Maybe it doesn't seem as stilted,
or put on
because it's like he's taking a drink, so it makes sense. But if you see someone who, just like naturally, like if you see someone who's talking and then like they take like a pause, it's like okay, well they're swallowing or collecting themselves, whatever. That's fine. That's normal. But if you see someone and they just stop talking mid sentence and then don't say anything for like 5 seconds, immediately like everyone is like that's weird.
Why is
that happening? And I don't think that rules just, or not rule, but I don't think people stop noticing that because it's comedy. So if someone's telling a joke and they set up for it and then they're just silent for this long time, it's like, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. But if someone's taking a drink, maybe it looks a little bit less weird.
I can see that for sure. Yeah. No, I mean that. It makes sense, and yeah, it was just something that popped into my head while I was watching it. Definitely not a criticism.
Right.
I am thinking of trying the stool thing at some point. Yeah. Like
we got to workshop this stool idea.
Yeah, I just got to go there and be like, all right, guys. I don't know. Yeah.
Get up without anything planned and then just for 4 minutes at open mic be like, I'm trying to work. Sitting into my set.
Yeah, just make the whole bit about.
And you just like sit in different places, like you sit on the stage, or you just like try like squatting and in the stool or whatever. You're like, does this feel better?
That would be very. That's very. I'm like, that was reminds me of the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee episode where with Ellen, and she talks about her first time doing stand up was her like stopping at a fast food.
Yeah,
and then eating and being like, hold on, putting her finger up, like, hold on, and then that just being the whole,
yeah,
and just, then be like, oh, well, time's up now, I gotta go,
yeah, right,
and I can see that, you're just getting on stage, trying to figure out where you want the stool to be, how you want to sit on it, and then
your time's up. That would be pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, I think the right person could pull that off. I don't think that's my thing. Like, yeah. I feel like I'm. It would seem like I feel like I'd be a little too self-conscious that it wouldn't quite work for me.
Yeah.
But I do know. I feel like there's a couple comics who could.
Yeah.
Sure, they could
pull it off. Yeah, I think so. It definitely would feel weird for me because, like, I don't know. It just feels less assured. Like things that I have written down, maybe I have more faith in.
I agree. Yeah.
But just something where it's like, I don't know, that joke sort of relies on, like, the audience feeling the awkwardness that you're trying to put out there.
Yeah.
And that might be a little bit harder. But I feel like it could work.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like knowing how to use space, knowing how to, move your body in funny ways, too. You know, because of all the different postures and poses, I think someone would have to, But yeah, that's. I'll leave that to others. You know, so
to the experimental comedian.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, and you are, you like that experimental, absurdist comedy, physical comedy. This is yours. We're not gonna come at you, claiming that you stole our bit. You know, so
make it your own.
Yes.
Yeah. Take it and run.
That's what we're here for. We're here to encourage you.
Yeah, we're comedy consultants.
We need to come up with a consulting fee.
Yeah.
At the end of each,
and we need to find clients.
I feel like that's the part. That's an important part of being a consulting company. People actually want to have to
consult with you. Yeah, we need income.
Yeah. So there you go. To keep us from being homeless comics.
Yeah.
Please give us money. For our material. I think this is a good note to end on. I feel like with us begging for money.
This is not a joke. We're desperate.
Yeah.
And please send help.
Yes. Yeah. Also, don't just send help, but also download this podcast on several different platforms. Yeah. Tell your friends to download. You don't even have to listen to it. They don't even, just download it and then look to send us money.
Yeah, get the word out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is good. We're at the 35-minute mark.
I think this is perfect.
Yeah. So we will release y'all for the rest of the week. And as always, have a safe and sexy weekend.
All right.
All right.